The way it is now, it will discourage investments by creating unnecessary and complexities. That means no jobs and no money for environmental investments. The plan doesn't propose any economical development strategy. It simply lists the assistance program already available. It would be better if the plan committed to the city to increase investment in the working harbor, especially on freight mobility. Keep working with us. We appreciate all the work the city has put into this plan. We think it can be made better. Tonight, we ask you to keep working on the important details and bring back the plan that is complete. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome.
Hi. Good evening, City Council members and Mayor Adams. Thank you for providing the opportunity to submit comments on the city's plan, and we appreciate the work that's been done on the plan to this point. My name's Marla Harrison, and I am the environmental manager for the Port of Portland's Marine and Industrial Development Division. There are two points I'd like to make tonight. First, the port does a lot to improve the quality of the Willamette River. Some are driven by compliance, and some are voluntary efforts. The port does a lot of in-water permitting so that we can fulfill our public mission. We're concerned that the new city river review process will make our job more complex, costly, and time-consuming without a commensurate environmental gain. We see greater efficiency and greater environmental improvement by paying a straight percentage fee in areas of developed terminals, as outlined by the Working Waterfront's letter to the mayor. Within the city of Portland, port facilities are some of the most sustainable and environmentally harmonious on the river. Let's use Terminal 5 as an example. Terminal 5 is home to Portland Bulk Terminals, which ships millions of tons of potash from Canada to grow food to feed the world. At the other end of the terminal sits Columbia Grain, who ships more wheat than any other exporter, thereby providing an export outlet to the region and, again, food to others. All this is done by the most carbon-efficient modes available, water and rail. Terminal 5 even uses a traction slug engine, which moves rail cars with electricity, not fuel. Permitting is a necessary part of doing business on the river, and this is below ordinary high water. It's an intense and complex process. We have 9 agencies that we deal with when we permit. These agencies are complying with at least 10 different laws. It takes us anywhere from 60 days to over 2 years to get permits. And returning to T5, we're in the process of obtaining a berth deepening permit to take advantage of the newly deepened Columbia River Federal Navigation Channel. Deeper draft vessels carry more cargo and less air quality impacts. The river plan would duplicate, complicate, and add requirements to this permitting process. Having worked with permitting for many years, I hope the river plan will not make an already challenging process more difficult and less protective of the environment. We hope that the city chooses to focus on results, not more process. Thank you.
Do you say you work for the port?
I do.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Before the next panel comes up, because I'd like the staff to come back up, because we're going to start losing people, and staff is actually, so thank you, appreciate it. We've actually, come on up, and whoever else needs to come up. If in the handout that Ann Gardner passed out, you'll find a table with their concerns. And this is the concerns of the Working Waterfront Coalition, and I want to do this now because we start losing people, or something that we have reviewed as we have all input. And at the back of your document that says February 12th, 2010, you'll see on a page that says response to the Working Waterfront Coalition's table 1. And I think they've modified their table a little bit, but I want to just, as we will take more testimony, but I just want council to be ruminating on some of the proposed responses from staff and the problem solving that we've sought to undertake. So, Sally, if you could walk us through that page.
Sure, thank you.
What page are you on?
It's this page that starts with
a number on it
right here. We can't afford numbers, but it says.
Sorry.
It's like, where's the last? Yeah, you got it. I think you had it right there.
Okay. Yeah, I've got it.
Again, these are, I just want to have, make sure that council has a chance while folks are still in the room to hear what staff is proposing by way of addressing some of the concerns.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, we received a letter from the Working Waterfront Coalition, or you did, on it's dated February 5th, and attached to that letter was a table listing seven concerns. The first concern is that there's inaccurate mapping, an unnecessary process for simple redevelopment projects. And so the city response to that is that it is and will continue to be the city's responsibility to correct zoning map errors at the request of a property owner. This work can be done either before the river plan is adopted or after. So there are, after the river plan is adopted, there are zoning map corrections that can take place. Property owners can request site visits at this city council hearing, and then we will go out to their properties just as we have done in the past and make sure that the natural resource inventory is appropriately mapped. We are willing to conduct site visits until September 30th, and if a revision is warranted, we'll bring zoning maps back for an additional council hearing in October prior to implementation.
And that's at our cost.
Mm-hmm. After the river...
Was that a yes?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And that's also the same answer to all of these others, too.
Okay.
There is a process to correct the zoning map after adoption, through an existing zoning code correction process. It's a type 2 review process initiated and paid for by the Bureau of Development Services. And through the process, an error can be corrected when a map line was intended to follow a feature and doesn't do that. We are also proposing a new service that 5 years after the date of implementation of the river plan, a property owner can also request just an NR, Natural Resource Inventory Accuracy Check, and that would be conducted by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. In addition to that, there is ground truthing of the Natural Resource Inventory that can take place during a river review. So during the course of a review, an applicant can submit site-specific environmental assessment information prepared by a qualified consultant to more precisely determine the location, type, extent, and quality of natural resources on the site. The rest of this answer just describes the natural resource inventory process that we used. Mindy Brooks, who did a lot of the site visits, is here today. There were a number of property owners who requested site visits during the Planning Commission, and staff went out and made changes as they saw appropriate.
So in response to the concern we heard about having to pay a lot of consultancy fees to update the natural resource inventory, we're offering to do that at our cost, not only at the outset of this policy, but as stipulated here on an ongoing basis moving forward.
That's right. We want that natural resource inventory to be correct, as correct as it can be.
And that responsibility.
Yes. The second question relates to, or issue, relates to complex and costly application. This is something you heard a lot of testimony about here this evening. So the city is going to pursue a combined application form for projects that require approval from the city, state, and federal government. The city doesn't generally require more information than the state and federal agencies require. However, the city does require a written narrative describing how an application meets the approval criteria. So the information is usually there within the materials that are provided to the state and federal agencies. They just need to write a written narrative. And the narrative is the applicant's opportunity to present their case as to why they feel their application meets the approval criteria. All city land use reviews
require... state and federal regulatory agencies signed off on a single application?
This is something that we've said that we are going to pursue. The City Bureau of Development Services does not see any problem achieving that. There are similar city, state, federal application processes in the country. I believe there's one in Washington State.
So, in order for us to move forward with this plan, we have to achieve that.
But what we have done, and the Office of Healthy Working Rivers is going to coordinate a city, state, federal review process. And Ann Beyer is here this evening, and if she's still here, perhaps she'd want to come and talk a little bit about that process. There is a flow chart in your amendment package, and I'm so sorry, these don't have numbers on them. There's a flow chart that we developed, and then it looks like this. I think yours is colored. It shows the city, state, and federal review timelines.
It's a few pages from the very, very back. No, it's a few pages from the very, very back.
Is it? Okay.
On the black and white version.
Oh, okay.
One of numbered pages?
Yes.
Here?
It's actually in the, it's the, in there twice.
Okay, okay. It's the third piece of paper from the very back.
Thank you. So there, this shows the city, state, and federal timelines. And if you are looking at a version that is in color, you'll see that there are gray boxes. There's a gray box at the beginning called the Willamette River Early Project Review, and then there are two other gray bars in the process that show this coordinated agency review. And here's Ann Beyer.
While we're waiting for Ann, this is not our efforts at the City Council might remember the River Trust, the Portland River Trust that was created around the time of the River Renaissance Plan. The River Trust has helped the city to not just speak to the need to be active in coordinating the federal, state, and other processes, but the River Trust has actually helped us perfect that process. It has been limited only to public applications, public city or government projects. It is now going to be opened up to all projects. Ann?
Right. Thank you. The streamlined process is based on the process our own city projects have used. We've had great cooperation from our federal and state partners. It will be open to private sector applicants who are going through a permitting process below ordinary high water. The goal is to get everybody's input up front so there are no surprises. If you look at the process diagram, the city process is probably the most flexible out of all the timelines. We can start the city process at many different times, unlike some of the longer state and federal processes. The goal is really to offer the opportunity. It will be a voluntary process that applicants can choose to take advantage of. We will do it as a pilot so that we can adjust as necessary. If people don't find it helpful, we won't do it. We know that for our own city projects, it's been very helpful in reducing the time it takes to get projects delivered in a very timely manner.
Thank you.
So the next topic is uncertain and potentially high city mitigation costs. And this is something I referred to in my opening remarks, and the mayor also alluded to it, that we propose that the City Council hold a hearing prior to the implementation date of the code to receive comments on the mitigation fee in lieu and the HEPHEA model that we are proposing to use to calculate the mitigation fee. In addition to that hearing, we will, I also mentioned that the Bureau of Environmental Services is working to convene a science review panel to review the science behind the HEPHEA model that you also heard a little bit about. And we are also committed to holding regular stakeholder meetings to keep people up to speed on where we are and the progress we've made and to get input into the process as we move forward.
And then, go ahead.
The gentleman from Gunderson, or representing Gunderson, testified that he's never seen the HEPA and HEA model successfully applied together, and he mentioned something about the Willamette partnership model.
Portions of the Willamette partnership model we found could work in the lower Willamette, but most of the model seems to be more targeted to smaller streams and the
And prairie lands.
So,
is it true, in your opinion, or I should say, in your opinion, the HEPA and HEA models have never been successfully applied together on a major, major river?
If I could call for another person to come down. Caitlin, are you still here? No, she's
there
left.
There she is.
No, she's right here.
Hi. Changing up. Good evening again. The HEP model, the Habitat Equivalency, I'm forgetting the acronym now, assessment in the habitat, anyways, the HEP and HEA model have been independently used, one by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Corps, the other one by NOAA Fisheries. They've never been utilized together. They've never had an opportunity to be utilized together, so there's not an example that's successful or unsuccessful. But these independently, these models are very well tested. They're quite rigorous. They have been bought into by state, local, and federal agencies throughout the nation. They've been tested by the courts. So we have a lot of confidence in these models. We have also looked at other types of models and banking systems, and those don't have quite the legs yet, but we are going to utilize pieces of those where they are applicable, and then as this evolves, certainly keep our minds open for those other models. That is one of the reasons that we're calling a science team together, to make sure that we're doing this in accordance with the best available science, and also provide that it's not a level of certainty, but a level of comfort to the applicants that they are going to be able to use a process that would apply at the federal, state, and local levels, whereas now there is no continuum between those three levels of government. And so they negotiate mitigation with the federal entity, and then negotiate it with the state, and then come back to the city, and then it changes, and they have to go back. And so this will hopefully really streamline the process.
How do we, from a city point of view, force the feds and the states to do a streamlined process at our request?
We do not, but everyone that we have been working with around the table sees the advantages to this, so we have verbal commitments from them to work through it. That's as much as we can hope for at this point. And
well, there's actually, if I could, Commissioner, there's actually, with the River Trust, we've actually done it on government projects. So we've had the opportunity to show ourselves how to take full advantage of that, and they've seen the benefit. This particular is actually, though, pushing it to the next level, and it's in direct interest of not asking applicants to go, as you described, to go through multiple hoops for different layers of regulation or different governmental regulations. So we're trying to provide the applicant the one-stop application, the one-stop process, and in this case, the science to back up their application. We're trying to allow them to have maximum value for the work that they're going to have to do in many cases on the state and federal level anyway.
So that can begin understanding and isolating what the issues are that I need to focus on. As we discussed the HEPHEA model, it is only used to determine what the mitigation needs to be for a particular project, not whether or not a project happens in the permitting process.
Right.
So that's apart and distinct from whether or not we adopt a Type 2 river review process, correct? And so that's helpful for me because I can set that aside. And so if we want, we can adopt this model to help us from the point that this ordinance becomes effective forward, determine what the mitigation needs to be because of a particular proposed project. However, on the permitting process, the Type 2 river review permitting process, as I'm looking at the flow chart, and it helps me refresh my memory when I see who the participants are on the top in terms of the state and federal regulators. So on the federal side, and I know this because we're beginning at the Fire Bureau to work on a waterfront project, hearing about the various layers of regulations apart from whatever the city might do for any river-related project. On the federal level, we got the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the National Marine Fisheries Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. On the state, we have the Oregon Department of State Lands, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. So we're proposing a new process to augment whatever it is that they regulate at our level. And I guess the question that is beginning to form in my mind as we're having this discussion, I've heard some of the industry folks say just on this particular piece, on the process piece of applying for a permit, they would rather, in lieu of doing this process, pay a new development fee I'm assuming they're suggesting over and above whatever the HPIA model determines the development fee should be, but in lieu of doing the permit process, pay that in lieu of going through another process. So the question I'm starting to develop is, what is the incremental value we get for habitat with the new process versus the amount of money they're willing to pay over and above what the HPIA mitigation model might determine they should pay for mitigation projects on the river?
So that kind of gets into number five. Okay. You're absolutely right. There is a window that where paying a fee is better for the environment and better for certainty of attracting business investment and reinvestment. There is a threshold where an in lieu of fee makes more sense to me. And so if you want to talk a little bit about how we're going to try to figure out what that in lieu of window is.
I guess I'm not asking for a particular answer. I was just more verbalizing where I'm at, listening to the testimony and reading what I have so far, and maybe even signaling what I'm looking for to help me get to wherever people want me to get.
Well, part of what we did was, if I could just, the folks wanted to know, okay, we perfected this process to a certain point, so we went back to old permits, old applications, and ran them through. People, Working Waterfront Coalition was concerned that the number that spit out for mitigation would be much higher than would be overly burdensome. So we took some old permits, put them through the proposed process, and what came out was, in some cases, you know, a couple thousand dollars that they would have to pay. So that then brought us to kind of your thinking that there is a threshold where an in lieu of fee makes more sense than making them spend money on consultants.
So I guess my question is it a threshold or is it something that we want to adopt for any river-related development? Again, and what I'm looking for is for anybody who wants to show me the incremental improvement that we will have in river quality and the various species of fish habitat improves over what those six or seven federal and state regulatory agencies provide currently. Is there that much of a gap that we need to step in and develop a new process, or should all development pay some fee in addition to the HPIA mitigation fee that would substantially contribute more to habitat restoration than this brand new process?
Well, first of all, I want to clarify that the city currently regulates below ordinary high water. These are refined regulations in this area.
So give me an example of, for instance, currently where the city requires...
It's expanded. I mean, it's an expansion of the city's purview under ordinary high water.
But do we permit...
But we do currently review below ordinary high water.
Do we permit that, and is it subject to land use review, and is it subject to appeal to LUBA currently?
I believe so.
Yes, there's Greenway review today for construction in the river. Below ordinary high water.
So I want you to listen very carefully to my question. So what I'm asking you is it currently permitted, and is it currently considered to be a land use decision that is appealable to LUBA?
One of your staff is here. Kim Talent, who is the supervisor of the group who reviews these.
Yes, it is currently reviewed through a land use review, and those are appealable. Currently, they're appealable to the hearings officer.
The hearings officer.
Yes, and then their decision is appealable to LUBA.
So it is currently appealable to LUBA. Yes. So is anything that we're doing in the regulatory aspect of these various regulations we're considering creating new appeals to LUBA that didn't exist, wouldn't have existed prior to the adoption of any of these new regulations?
We don't think so. And in fact, we think because of the new exemptions that have been added, as well as the new set of development standards, there are, we will perhaps have fewer land use reviews for work along the Willamette River.
That was a great answer.
I think the Working Waterfront Coalition would argue that the scope of what the city can look at expands. There have been some other, the changes you just described overall, you can say that through the whole system might be narrowed, but the Working Waterfront Coalition is concerned that the different kinds of things that this proposed change allows for means different kinds of an expanded list of things could be appealable.
That is true, yes. The criteria will be different.
So this chart, do you have this flow chart?
Somebody has
it up there. Can maybe anybody, any one of you up there, just so I can focus maybe better than just what the answer was, what about that flow chart is different than what we do now on just the City of Portland side, the Type 2 review?
Nothing to my knowledge.
The proposal is to be a Type 2X review, and it's currently a Type 2 review,
right.
so that's different.
And so what does X mean?
What that does is it adds an additional week up front. So when an application comes in, instead of having 2 weeks for the planner to review the application for completeness, we would have three.
Okay.
And the reason why that was proposed instead of keeping the Type 2 process that we currently do is because we heard feedback from the industries that they would like check-in points earlier and more frequently with other service bureaus that have feedback on mitigation that may come up as a result of the review. And that three-week period would allow us to send out what we call a request for completeness, or basically an early request for comments to Bureau of Environmental Services and any other bureaus that we think would need to have input earlier on in the process.
I see. So the criteria you were discussing just before I pointed you to the flowchart, what is the change in criteria?
My understanding is that we've added or we're more specific in relating to the inventoried resources and functional values that we would be looking at,
okay,
and weighing alternatives to location and design and construction methods. So what it does is it's changing the Greenway review to mimic more closely how we review applications in environmental zones.
And if I could, Commissioner Yord, just to make note for staff to think about or react to, your notion is not the threshold for fee in lieu of. Your notion was, is there a threshold in which they don't go through this process?
Well, the question I'm beginning to have is, if we currently have a permitting process, why is the Working Waterfront Coalition proposing to pay a fee in lieu of a process that already exists? I mean, I guess by implication, I'm thinking they're thinking there's something new that they're having to do if we pass this that they didn't have to do before. They wouldn't be offering to pay $125,000. And what is, and I'm just trying to figure out what that is.
I don't necessarily want to comment for them, but my understanding from their comments is that they believe that by eliminating a city review, it would shorten their overall time frames, and so they would prefer to pay instead of going through that process.
But you're saying they go through the review currently?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
And this flow chart shows that the city process is actually much shorter than the state and federal review timelines. What we've plugged in here is the coordination process, which would allow the city, state, and federal processes to proceed all at once. And so in order to do that, an applicant would have to request that their application be extended.
Yes, they would grant an extension to the city to basically put the case on hold and allow them to work through the state and federal permitting processes to get more feedback from them to make sure that when the city issues a decision, it's not in conflict with what state and federal agencies would require. So this extends the process, but in general, for example, in 2009, our greenway reviews took anywhere between 35 and 100 days. So there's a broad range on how long it takes to process an application, and part of that is whether the applicant chooses to place things on hold to work on things.
Thank you. Can you continue to go through the concerns
yes.
and our proposal
yes.
to address them?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim.
So where were we? Expensive process number four. Expensive process with little or no environmental gain. Need flexibility to encourage business to redevelop. So this is, Mayor, this is what you were referencing. The city proposes to explore thresholds under which an applicant could mitigate off-site without following the HEPIA model. And we have not had the time to enter into those discussions about what that threshold should be. But as the mayor was referring to, there may be situations, and it may be a certain number of square feet or certain activity that it's possible that an applicant would be able to mitigate off-site without using that HEPIA. We'd have to determine what calculation process that they would have to use. So how would we determine the mitigation if we don't use HEPIA? But we could try to figure that out.
So in some of the test runs that we did, the good news was that the end product, the fees that they had to pay were not high, but the potential consultancy, as you heard from Ann, the potential consultant work might be more than the fees they might have to pay us, and that's kind of a waste of everyone's time and money.
Well, I followed up on that. I asked the city's consultant, who's helping us develop this model, Tetra Tech. It's a local company. They sent us an estimate of what they believe it would take a consultant to run HEPIA, on a consultant who was generally knowledgeable about these sorts of things but was not familiar with the city's proposed HEPIA process. They calculated it would take about a day for a consultant to get up to speed on what the city's process was. There'd be a day in the field, and anyway, I don't have it in front of me, but the final number was somewhere between $5,000 and $6,000 to actually run the entire HEPIA process and provide a client with a product.
So you can see from the scrunchy faces out there that they have a different view of things, and that's why we'll take the time to figure out what the threshold is.
But this is what our consultant told us. So the next item, predictability for business to encourage redevelopment. I believe that We did recommend an amendment that would allow applicants to pay a fee in lieu of meeting the standard. So at this point, there are some standards in the River Plan Code, and if someone wants to use the standards, they have to mitigate on site. And one of the things that business asks for is the opportunity to be able to use that standards process but still be able to mitigate off-site. And so we did, the mayor did propose an amendment in response to that. We also understand that the Port and perhaps the Working Waterfront Coalition have been working on some recommended standards for activities that are commonplace for business. And we haven't seen those yet, but if they provide them, we'd be happy to review them. Number six, uncertain process and potential delay. This, and I may need Kim Talent's help again on this. One of the concerns was that there should be a time limit on city review. So state law and the city zoning code limit the time within which a city needs to make a decision on a land use case. In the Type 2X process, which we are proposing here, the city must make a final decision within 42 days of the day the application is deemed complete. And the city cannot make a final decision until at least 30 days after the application is complete. So it's between 30 and 42 days. If an applicant chooses to participate in this early review process, they'd put the process on hold in order to follow this process, the early review process. One of the other things that the Working Waterfront Coalition was wondering is how long after the biological opinion is issued, could the city take action? And
so according to the Type 2 process, 2X process, if the project was put on hold on day one after the application was deemed complete, once the biological opinion comes in and the application is taken off hold, the maximum amount of time the city could take to make a final decision is 42 days. If the city has spent some of those 42 days prior to it being put on hold, that would then shorten that timeline. So there's a time limit on how long it would take after the biological opinion is rendered by NOAA.
The second thing the Working Waterfront Coalition asked for was for us to require that applicants go through this enhanced permit review process. And our response to that is that we're not sure that all applicants would necessarily benefit, and so we would prefer to leave the process voluntary at this point, especially until we get a track record there. The next concern was that they wanted us to provide an option for a Type 3 appeal. And we don't feel like it's appropriate for river review cases to be decided by City Council. Type 3 cases are those that require a substantial amount of discretion, have a high impact on the overall city, such as a zone change or a land division that will affect a lot of people. So while a river review understandably is significant for that particular property owner, the impacts to the broader community aren't as significant. So the mayor's proposed amendment is that we follow the 2X process that you just heard about from Kim Talent. And then the other piece here that's important to know is that if an applicant feels like they're being asked for too much information or that staff is not responding in a timely way, they can demand that the city issue a decision. And if the city denies the application due to lack of information, the applicant can appeal that to a hearings officer. And that hearings officer could find that the city doesn't have a good reason to ask for the information, and they could reverse the staff's decision.
That is an innovation that is pretty unique. But it,
again, I would think the
part of your proposed amendments, or
correct.
Is,
yes,
I would think the outcome of asking demanding that the city issue a decision would be like demanding a judge to issue a decision. I don't know that I would want to do that.
Isn't the 2X like the 2X in subdivisions?
Yes, it's
so
same.
It's actually the expedited review, and
yeah.
And many of us in the my old cohorts in the neighborhood community didn't like that because, in fact, it was very much easier for the applicant to get their permit quicker without what we felt was the right level of scrutiny. So this is actually a bonus. In addition to the 3 weeks before for the planner to review it, it gets you through the process faster.
And this is responsive to a lot of fear that folks will just get stuck. Go ahead. Let's finish this up.
So number seven, concern is that the code places limits on mitigation bank opportunities, demands use of the HEP-HEA combo. So the city is not proposing to require that any particular model be used by a mitigation bank. However, the city wants to be sure that whatever model is used is scientifically based and accounts for loss of resources over time. In addition, the city wants a model that the state and federal agencies can agree to collectively use so that we can have that one-stop shopping mitigation that's agreed to by all the state and federal agencies as well as the city.
So according to the testimony, there's a disconnect between what some of the folks think is happening with regards to this issue and what this says. Is that language that is in the city response contained within the amendments?
No, Ann pointed out a place where I neglected to make a language clarification or a language change in relation to that amendment. That's my fault, and I missed
okay.
it, and I will correct it.
Thank you.
You're fired.
That's a great answer, too.
Thank you.
Okay, and the final item here is accountability. The question was about where would the in-lieu fee money go, and I don't know if anybody else from BES is here who wants to speak to this, but my understanding is that there will be a sub-account in a BES account where the in-lieu fee money would be deposited, and the city would restrict the use of those funds to activities directly associated with restoration, and that would include land acquisition, design, construction, long-term maintenance. So we are absolutely committed to accountability with that money. We want that money to be spent on restoration. So,
great. Well, this selectivity has helped me a lot.
Thank you.
So we will go back to testimony, and we are at the magic mark where we get down to 1 minute each.
The next three are Joe Esmond, David Harvey, and Dan Rolfe. They'll be followed by Glenn Gordon, Art Wagner, and Sue Marshall.
Sue Marshall, are you here? Or come on up. We have an empty chair, I think. Are you coming up? Oh,
I can.
Yeah, come on up.
Joe Esmond, David Harvey,
oh,
Dan
she's
Rolfe.
She's faster than you are. Come on up, Sue. Joe, why don't you begin?
Good evening. My name is Joe Esmond. I reside at 3558 Southwest Hume Street, Portland, Oregon. I am a business rep for the IBW Local 48, representing roughly 3,000 members around here. I am representing an endangered species also. It's called the working man. It's called the working woman and working families. I'm going to apologize up front because I've been doing this for about 3 months now and other avenues, trying to get people to work, trying to send signals out to the business community around the world to bring your businesses here. I've offered my services to the city, and I've offered my services to the state to go help attract businesses to put people to work who pay taxes in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. We share the passion. Hi.
Hi. Mayor Adams, members of the
Council, my name's Sue Marshall. I'm here tonight representing the Tualatin Riverkeepers in support of the North Reach River Plan. I want to thank everyone whose hard work went into bringing this forward. We are a part of the Willamette Basin. We feel that our 40-year investment in restoring the Tualatin Basin is dependent on safe passage for salmonids through the city of Portland and the Willamette River. It's daunting, undoubtedly, to look at the century of impact. I think the Tualatin River is an example of a river that 40 years ago you wouldn't have held out very high hopes for its improvement. But the citizens in the Tualatin Basin are reaping the benefits. A couple of specifics related to the North Reach River Plan. We are supportive of the riparian habitat that can being restored. It continues to be in decline. These pearls of restoration are important refuge for migrating salmonids. We also are supportive of local regulation and oversight enforcement to assure that the plan is implemented and protected. We are aware of the great investment that the City of Portland has made in stormwater treatment and Greta Green. We appreciate that. We feel like we're in this together with you. We are counting on you, and likewise, you can count on us to do our utmost to protect and restore the spawning and rearing habitat in the upper reaches.
Thank you. I'll let you go over.
Thanks.
I'll let you go over now.
Yo.
Dave Harvey Gunderson, Environmental Director.
You
Gunderson has 1,000 living wage jobs. Some of the people from Gunderson are here. Some of the living wage job folks who start work before most of us get up have already left. Four things, this is the one-minute version, four things wrong. One, the application. Two, the process. Three, the supporting data. And four, how it's going to affect projects. One, the application process. It's complicated, costly, and uncertain. If you're going to do one thing, get rid of the habitat evaluation procedure, HEP. Costly, doesn't add any value. Two, process. Can add value, is duplicative, especially below ordinary high water. What is good for the salmon is good for the habitat. Fee in lieu of instead, spend money on the river, not on paperwork. Spend money on the river, not on paperwork. Three, the NRA for us, the 1987 inventory was more accurate than the supposed updated one. 1987 had us as the lowest possible rank on the river. We haven't degraded it since we've been there, but it was low, it is low, and the NRI is wrong. Projects, we have an example project in our handout. The our estimate is $185,000, 6% of project costs. And one final thing, the legal issues, the added legal items. Our lawyer, our outside counsel, tells me there are issues with that. I don't know the details.
I think we've addressed most of those issues in our most recent response, and we'd welcome your comments on the most recent legal issues raised by the city attorney. Thank you for your testimony.
We will, but I don't necessarily agree with the fact that they've been addressed. So,
thanks. I know.
Yep.
Who are the next three?
Yeah. Did David Harvey or Dan Rolfe here? Okay.
David Harvey.
Yeah, David Harvey. That was you. Okay, sorry. Glenn Gordon. Art Wagner. Mara Gross, Stephen Hatfield.
Go ahead, Art.
Kim Kaisila.
She'll just keep yelling.
More is coming down.
Okay. I'm Art Wagner. I'm a longshoreman retired. I started working on the Portland waterfront for the Portland Commission of Public Docks, loading green hides filled with maggots and blood and salt. In 1960, I retired in August of last year, 6 weeks short of 49 years. I've supervised by being the foreman on almost every kind of a job on the Portland waterfront. I've driven all the cranes for the Port of Portland. I've driven all the cranes for Schnitzers. I've supervised all their jobs. I am very familiar with the Willamette River, especially what's now known as this particular reach we're talking about. Which is pretty silly because the river is a river. It's part of a system, and to treat it as chopping it up is just chopping it up and will continue to damage it. Let me tell you something else about about what you've heard from my good friend Bill, my good friend from the Port of Portland, and
Bill Wyatt,
and those guys. They gave you big numbers about money and how much work was being done, and that's all true. And those jobs are extremely important. So the working waterfront, as far as jobs concerned, is critical. Except that the waterfront, the work and the industrial work has really changed in the whole Portland area, in the whole world. And typically, I'll give you one example, was that there's a third of the people working on the waterfront now in the longshore industry in Portland is the one who was when I started. And if you'll remember, Commissioner Fish, when you came to talk with the Local 8, when you were campaigning for office, and you gave a good speech, and then you asked, how many of you live in Portland? Two people raised their hands. We had about 300 of our 500 members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric. Hi.
Good evening. I'm Mara Gross, Policy Director at Coalition for a Livable Future. CLF represents more than 90 community groups, including Portland Audubon and Urban Green Spaces Institute, whose work has been instrumental to the current proposal you have before you. The river plan supports improvements to the most degraded stretch of the entire Willamette. It serves a part of river for communities that have historically had minimal access. When they get that access, they ought to see a community asset. Right now, they see a river that's trashed. You have before you a balanced plan, and in fact, community groups have made significant concessions to achieve this balance. This plan is a good example of addressing the true costs of development rather than externalizing them. It's important that the state maintain its regulatory authority because much more than state and federal agencies, you speak for us. You speak for the community. Please don't give away that voice. Kudos to the city for the hard work in working to create this plan. You have worked in good faith, creating a plan that shouldn't be undermined at the 11th hour. In sum, we believe no further changes need to be made. Please adopt the plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
Yes, my name is Glenn Gordon. Good evening, the mayor and the commissioners. I'm here as an individual, as a resident of the Linton community. I'm here to discuss with you the efforts that have been put forth to create a constant roadblock that prohibits our effort to have one of the stipulations in the North Reach River Plan study removed. The condition we identify includes the establishment of a 30-year moratorium land use designation for a 37-acre parcel located in the heart of Linton. The members of the community have shown up and testified before every appropriate body and allowed public testimony or input that has allowed that to express our concern about this issue. Our message is consistent about our request to get 30-year moratorium condition we oppose removed from the plan. No one hears us. No one answers us. No one gives us so much as a simple answer as to why we are crazy. I'm not here as a member of the Working Waterfront Coalition, but I believe that we have the right to have the support of that coalition. I'll tell you why. We believe the Linton community has earned the right to be designated as a good neighbor with our industrial neighbors, and I believe we have the right to ask for their support. I say this with the knowledge that we have become used to the idea of getting our drums blasted with the sounds of thousands of tons of shredded scrap metal sliding down massive chutes into empty ship holes at all hours of the day or night. We don't complain about the massive about this situation, and we don't complain about explosions that shake our foundations and rattle our windows when unexpected explosions occur when undiscovered tanks explode. What we are here to ask for is don't lock this 37-acre parcel up and throw away the key. We don't know the future of that land use. The landowners don't know it. The commission doesn't know it. Planners don't know it. Community doesn't know it. 30 years is a long time to throw something away when we don't know the future. Please don't let that get locked up. It does not benefit anybody. The land is inappropriately zoned, but it doesn't do any good to lock it up and throw it in that hopper. Please exclude it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next three.
Was Dan Rolfe, Stephen Hatfield, or Jim Kaisila here? Thank you. Let's go with Alan Horton, Kurt Schneider, Bernie Bottomley. And then if they're here, Eric Stromquist, Corky Collier, and Ariana Longnecker.
What was that, Mary?
Oh, Mary, I thought you left. Mary Vogel?
Please come forward out after this group, Mary.
I thought you left. I got an email. I thought you had left. So. I'll call you next.
Mr. Bottomley?
Bernie Bottomley, Mr. Mayor, and members of council with the Portland Business Alliance. It's a late hour, so I'll be brief. Want to compliment the mayor and Commissioner Fritz for your work on meeting with the business community and working through a number of the issues between the draft and these amendments. We appreciate that effort, and I hope the council also appreciates that the business community has moved on this issue as well. We've come forward with a number of proposals, not the least of which is offering a 2.5% fee on development in lieu of some of the regulatory issues that are being proposed. I'd like to answer Commissioner Leonard's question earlier about why would the business community be willing to offer a 1.5% fee in lieu of Riverview. And the reason is that the experts who do permitting for projects as a profession on a day-in and day-out basis that work for the harbor businesses have looked at this proposal, and they are convinced that the cost of going through Riverview will be more than 1.5% of the project cost. And until that issue is resolved, we would ask you not to move forward on this plan. The issues obviously are very complex. There's obviously still a lot of misunderstanding and disagreement about the details. Moving forward at this point would be like, you know, agreeing to a 30-year mortgage without having the interest rate filled in. So we'd like to have the opportunity to continue to work in the productive way that we have in the last couple of weeks to work out those issues. But there are still significant issues at stake.
So, Bernie, on this topic, I don't know if I'm confused or what, but you heard the questions I asked the staff, and what they said was that there was a review currently.
There is.
Now, are you talking about the HPIA mitigation?
No, I'm talking about the river review process. There is.
So let me ask my question. So are you asking that a current process that currently exists should no longer exist, or are you describing some incremental new addition or layer to the process that currently exists?
The in-river review, the below ordinary high water review, there are issues that the city can review in those permit applications.
But and it does.
Can and does.
And does currently, okay.
They're very limited. And our analysis, not mine personally, but the analysis of the experts that work in this field is that there's significant added criteria and requirements that will be placed on the businesses as a result of the revised in-water review. And their analysis is that is of such a scope that it will cost more than 1.5% of the project cost. That's why they're offering to pay a fee in lieu of that process.
So what I need then is a very specific communique from you guys that's not a diatribe and not all of that, but very specifically what it is that's added that doesn't exist now, so I can show that to the staff and the mayor, and we can look at it and respond to make sure that...
Yeah, we'll provide that for you.
Part of it was let's leave it. That's a good suggestion. Just to say, everyone has consulted up, so we get a lot of different consultants saying a lot of different things, so...
I'm not looking for that.
I know you're not.
I will not read that. What I will read is here is what you're adopting that's new, that is not currently in code, that will require this extra process that we're... So you're not asking not to do what we currently do. You're asking whatever the incremental differences in the new language that we adopt require.
Exactly.
And I would be interested in your analysis as to how you came to the 1.5% as being fair, because that on a $100,000 project, that would be $1,500, right?
$15,000, yeah. Which is a significant increase on a project of that size.
Well, 1.5% would be $1,500.
Well, Yeah.
I went to Grand High School.
Yeah, yeah. You're a general. You're a general.
I know they're threatening to close it, but it was.
I've got a consultant.
I'd like to know how you came to that figure and how it would play out. Because I know that some of the permit fees for environmental review are for on a single family house or similar. So I just want to know more information about how you got to there. Thank you.
So I would just say the reason that the consultants, depending on who their client are, offer wildly varying estimates. And so that's why where we have not had time to do our sort of own independent work and listen to all the consultants and all the practitioners out there, that's why some of these elements are not decided in establishing this plan. This plan calls for a work plan to have the kind of public input